Welcome to Tech Talk, y'all.
Hi, and welcome to Tech Talk, y'all, Season 11, Episode 287. I'm Adam Walker.
And I'm Sanjay Parekh.
We've got a great episode for you today. We do have to talk a little bit about Musk and some of his other companies.
Oddly enough, you're supposed to say
Twitter.
He who is not to be named.
Yeah, he who shall not be named. But then we got some other really interesting stuff about like NVIDIA and some stuff scientists are doing to make energy from air. I must have missed that one. You're going to have to tell me about that one, Sanjay.
Yep.
Plus high quality headphones that you can replace the battery on, Lyft's new super secret plans, and weird, wacky, and tech wrecks at the end. So it's going to be a great show. Sanjay, what do we got?
So first up, we're talking about first two stories about he who shall not be named, but apparently is going to get named. A whistleblower drops 100 gigabytes of Tesla secrets to a German news site.
Yeah.
This is a big deal. Yeah. And there's a lot of revelations in here. Some of the things that I've read, there's other articles that talk about how their people were instructed to not write anything down about these complaints, to do them all verbally so that there is no record. That is,
yeah, like, well, specifically the Tesla employees mm-hmm. were instructed to never send an email,
yep.
never leave a voicemail, never yep. send a text message, only give people information verbally when you're communicating to them over the phone so that it couldn't be tracked back in any kind of legal action. So I just want to make sure that's clear. Go ahead.
Yeah, that's not good. But apparently there are thousands of complaints about the car self-accelerating, unintentional braking, all kinds of stuff that are real safety concerns. And I'm wondering now, has all this been reported to the National Highway Transportation Safety Administration? And if not,
We don't know if all of these cases were in the U.S. A lot of them were in the U.S., but we don't know if all of them were. But I mean, like in particular, like there, one number that stuck out to me was 139 cases of unintentional emergency braking. That's not just phantom braking. That's emergency braking, which I assume means like slamming on the brakes as hard as possible, which kind of seems like really bad and really dangerous in so many ways. So
So a caveat there. It depends on the situation that this happens in, because I'll tell you, so my car, I've got a Volvo. It does this every now and again when it is under the impression that I'm about to slam into a car.
Right.
And I understand the situation that we're in. It's usually city driving, and I can see that the car in front of me is turning. Right.
Yeah.
But I don't fully slow down because I know, like, oh, they're going to be out of the way. But my car's like, no, doing the math here, you are going to hit it. And it sometimes freaks out. Very first time it did this, man, it freaked me out. Like, it started dinging really loud. There's a thing in the heads up display that's flashing the brake. Like, it goes like nutso.
I think the real takeaway here is that you actually tailgate people in the city and your car knows it. Like, that's really, it's okay, man. You can own it.
If that was true, I would change the emergency braking to apply late. Instead, I actually have it set to apply early.
I believe that about you. I'm more
on the safe side. Like, yeah. I want the car to freak out if it thinks I'm going to do something bad.
All right. That's fair.
So keep me safe. So I don't know if all 139 are necessarily bad.
Yeah, but maybe not.
This is like highway speed driving and it's coming to a dead stop, yeah, that's bad.
Oh, man.
Especially if it's for no reason.
Yeah, yeah. Well, speaking of things to freak out about, Elon Musk's Neuralink says it has FDA approval for study of human brain or study of brain implants. So this is for human subjects. Now, we don't know how many they've been approved for, but we know they have some approval, maybe up to 10 patients potentially. But like they've been plagued with all kinds of problems, like where they've been rushing surgeries in animals to try to get FDA approval. At one point, I think they said they implanted like 30 or 40 pigs with the wrong size implant. So then those pigs had to be destroyed. Like all kinds of like random, weird, very avoidable problems if you're just moving forward cautiously. That really kind of concerns me for any humans that they might interact with.
Doesn't this feel like, in a lot of ways, like the job of being the Twitter CEO? It's an avoidable problem.
Yeah.
And for some reason, somebody is actually volunteering for that. Like, this feels like the same kind of thing. Like, and maybe that person who's going to be the new Twitter CEO also volunteered for this because clearly they don't have good judgment. because who would want either one of these things?
I mean, I will say, like, I think the technology that Neuralink or those types of devices offers is really interesting and can become a really big deal in the future. But having Elon Musk at the head of it at this point, like, I don't trust anything that guy does. I mean, really don't.
It is too much fast and loose of everything. And there's some things like, you can play fast and loose, like building a video game for a mobile phone.
Right.
Play fast and loose with
that. Yeah. Even social media platforms to some degree with the code and how it works. Play fast and like that. That was Zuckerberg's, like, you know, move fast and break things. Okay.
When you're starting
on Facebook, fine.
When you're starting, yes. Yeah. When you're like necessarily for the entire planet, no.
Yeah. But also like not with cars. You know, not with self-driving cars. Not with things you're implanting in people's brains. No. Not with satellites. No. I mean, like he's fast and loose with Twitter, and honestly, whatever. I don't care at this point. Like, it's just negligible at this point. I saw another article that we didn't tag that the valuation on Twitter is now half of what he paid for it. Just as an aside. So.
Yeah. I think that's being generous.
Agreed.
Really, at this point, it's probably close to zero or possibly even negative at this point.
I don't know who would ever want to go there. I just don't.
I mean, it's like these people that didn't learn from the Theranos, right? It's like,
also, we didn't tag this article.
We did.
I think she reported to jail or prison yesterday. So. She's now officially in prison. So, and
beginning the 11-year sentence. Although she is appealing.
Yeah.
But it's not looking good.
What
is looking good for Nvidia is their shares surging to a record close with a 24% rally. And actually, I think after this article came out, it continued to go up. They are now a $1 trillion company joining.
Oh, are they?
Yep, joining Facebook, Apple, Amazon, and one more, Microsoft, maybe. I don't remember all the trillion people. Because, you know, just give me 1%. Like, that's all I need.
Wow.
I don't need the full.
Well, and this was on the back of the people realizing that NVIDIA chips were essential for AI. And they're like, the AI rush is connected to NVIDIA chips. Done. We're going to invest there. I mean, makes sense. Like,
it's been an interesting time for NVIDIA, right? It was so hard in the beginning days of the pandemic or just before the pandemic because of all the crypto mining, which they were necessary for. There was a huge demand for that. And then things softened because of that. And actually, I know, like, we were trying to buy a video card during this time, too. And it was
hard.
And it was expensive. And that card now you can buy for a fraction of the price that we paid for it.
I bet.
And it was somewhat necessary. We needed it then to do some for our son who's in school to do rendering for his major. They've now gotten this second wave of AI stuff that is using these video cards and record revenues and everything else like that. And I think the idea here is that there is probably no end in sight to this, right? For the crypto mining stuff, there was an end in sight to it because everybody realized, like, okay, this is eating up a lot of energy.
Yeah,
it's very expensive. This doesn't make sense. And so some new algorithms came out to be more energy conscious and you know, less intensive that way, but still accomplish the same things. But with AI, it's not like you can be like, how can we make this more energy friendly? Like, no, you just got to compute the stuff. Like, algorithms will get better over time.
Right.
But there's still going to be algorithms that need a lot of computational stuff. So, there you have it.
Well, speaking of the energy that we need to create for these things, scientists find a way to make energy from air using nearly any material. And this is an article that you added at the last minute, which I have not read. So I'm going to back off and let you tell me about this one.
So this is an incredible article, especially if you're in Atlanta, because the material, they can use any material. They make these like nanopores or something like that. And it's taking the energy out of the humidity in the air.
Oh, man.
You see where I'm going with this?
I do. Man, there's a lot of humidity up in here.
There's a lot of humidity. Ooh. This could, like, I almost don't even care about the energy that this creates. Mm-hmm. Like, just take the humidity out of the air.
Yeah,
it would make Atlanta so much more livable. Come on, man. Mm-hmm. So, this is pretty fascinating. They can do this with almost any material, they say, and it just uses the humidity in the air. And even in dry climates, there is still water vapor in the air that this could take energy from. And so this doesn't depend on air movement, doesn't depend on the sun. And so this could actually be a more consistent way of creating energy. And there is always water vapor in the air. And I think, you know, like in some places like Atlanta, like take all the humidity. You can have it all. Make it into energy. And then there you go. We don't need nuclear power plants, which, by the way, Georgia Power just activated, I think, this last weekend.
Okay.
The first one of the big thing that they've been building for a long time.
Good to know.
Next up, these high quality headphones can last years longer than Sony and Bose alternatives. So this is actually a story about one of my favorite companies that I cannot buy from, which is Fairphone, which is a European-based company. We've talked about them before. So they make a phone, a mobile phone, that you can replace parts with yourself. So DIY, fix it, replace it, all that. They have now created and released high-quality headphones, which have noise canceling too.
Yep.
And it has a bunch of, it has 11 parts that you can take apart and replace yourself
with no tools.
Any tools. Yeah.
No tools. Yeah. It's kind of crazy.
Pretty awesome. I am so jonesing for this, and you can't buy them here in the US.
Yeah. And they're kind of expensive too. Like I think it was $266 US to buy them, which is, I mean, that's not a little. And then, you know, the other part of us thinking about it too is like, okay, so you can replace the battery, and if something like one of the headphone sides breaks or something, you can replace it. But like, how often do your headphone batteries go bad, and how often do they, like, I've got headphones that last, like, man, they last a long, long time. So like, I'm not sure this really, like, I feel like the cell phone thing actually does solve a problem because, you know, it's broken into components. You can swap out for a better camera. Batteries go dead faster. You can swap out for a different battery. Like, that actually makes sense. Headphones, I feel like, have a much longer lifespan than.
Yeah, I think the things that go bad, at least for me, are the cups that go against your head.
Okay,
So those, being able to replace those easily is a nice thing. The battery's probably the next up. I don't know. I guess it depends on how you use them. These are wireless.
Yeah.
You know, you can go probably a year and a half, 2 years. You know, every time you charge them, they shorten the lifespan.
Yeah.
So over time, they get shorter and shorter. So it's nice to know that you can replace them. The other thing that these headphones have, they have a IP54 rating, which means that they're resistant to water and dust, even though you can take them all apart, which I think that's a pretty interesting feat of engineering that they did there.
Yeah, that's pretty cool.
Apparently the sound, according to this article, is pretty good. It's not going to rank as the best ever, but if you're buying these headphones, it's not just because of the sound. It's also because the sustainability of it all.
I mean, the other thing to consider is like as far as headphones go, there comes a certain level of quality above which the average user will never, ever, ever notice or care about a difference. Yeah. And so like when they start like, oh, it's the top 10 best audio headphones, like anybody in the top 10, honestly, anybody in the top 50, the average user is going to be like, these are great. You know, so like, so at some point you just go like, who cares? It doesn't matter. Yeah. Like I'm not a hardcore audio dude. It doesn't matter. So, and I am a hardcore audio dude, and I still recognize that it doesn't matter that much. So
yeah, I think they just have to be good. And it looks like these are good, and they'll last you a very long time. So
All right.
Feel good about buying them.
Well, speaking of good things, maybe, I don't know, YouTube removed dislike counts. So this guy made Rotten Tomatoes for YouTube videos. And in particular, like, it also showed there are several other websites that like allow you to rate, give up to 5 stars or 4 stars for YouTube channels, and then like write reviews of the channels themselves, which actually I find that more helpful. Like I would love to find more channels to follow rather than individual videos.
Yeah.
And it's sometimes kind of hard to figure out like which channels are interesting. How often do they publish? Do they consistently publish good stuff? So I'm going to start looking through some of these because this looks really interesting to me.
Yeah. So the website is, so we don't bury the lead there, Favory. So this is a bonus tech rec for listeners. Favory. Favore.io. Favory.io.
Yep.
And so, it's interesting. The thing that this kind of brings up is, you might have your platform and the things that you want to do, but if you take away things or don't add things that your user base wants, somebody might make it instead
and take away traffic.
yeah, take away traffic, yeah. But also, yeah, do things that you may not agree with.
Though I will say, like, I do kind of like that YouTube took away the thumbs down. Like, yeah. it feels like a negative metric that doesn't add a ton of value and, right. and can be used very abusively. So I don't disagree with that choice, but you're right. I mean, other things do pop up in the gap that provides. So,
yeah. I wonder how long it's going to be before Favory gets acquired by YouTube.
I think that would be a great goal. I mean, that's the dream, right? That's the dream of most entrepreneurs, like found it, get acquired by YouTube. So yeah. That's the way to go.
Somebody that's not sitting back and waiting for somebody to build things for them, although they're relying on something that somebody else built, is Lyft. Lyft's secret plan to take control of its maps and its future.
This was fascinating.
It was a fascinating read. So this is actually from their blog. And they're talking about the map system that they have in the app. And they relied on Google Maps. And they had a lot of issues because of it. Like, they would calculate fares one way, but then Google Maps would calculate
route people a different way.
A different way, and the fare would be higher, but they wouldn't charge the rider higher because they already quoted a price.
Right.
And so Lyft would be on the hook for that difference.
Yep. And then little things like where Google Maps, and I didn't even realize this, like Google Maps will always give you the fastest route. And so they might take you down a toll road where the toll is $5. When that route's only 1 minute faster than a different route that doesn't include the toll road. And so that presents a huge problem from a Lyft perspective, because if you're paying, you know, $15 for a ride and then you add a $5 toll on that for really no reason, it doesn't make a lot of sense.
Yeah. And honestly, this is a problem too with Waze as well, which Google also owns. And I've seen the problem in both in Google Maps and in Waze, where I'll set it to fastest and sometimes it'll route me and make me drive like 7 miles longer just for a 1 minute reduction in time, which is silly.
Which is not helpful.
There is no way to set in either one of those apps of like, yeah, I want faster, but plus or minus like this time, and then also optimize based on distance. I'm not sure why no one has done that.
Yep.
Like, I'm good with a couple of minutes. And also, most of these apps have access to your calendar. And if it knows when you need to get to a place, then it should optimize based on both of those things so that you're not polluting the environment more than you need to based on when you need to get to a place. Like missing piece of sustainability is just not there really in Maps. So what Lyft has ended up doing, they're actually using the OpenStreetMap platform as their basis for this. And they've been watching this for quite some time. And in 2019 determined that it was good enough now for them to actually build their own mapping component for their app. And so presumably they've been working for the last 4 years to integrate all this and think about this. The other interesting data point that they had here was that they said between 70 and 80% of US road segments host a Lyft ride at least once every 10 days.
Yeah.
70 and 80%.
That's a lot, man. Yeah.
And I'm sure if you add in like Uber, it's probably, if you combine Uber and Lyft, it's probably like 80 to 90% of all road segments have a trip every 1 to 10 days.
Then another couple things from this article that I thought was interesting too is number one, like it makes sense for Lyft to have a map for themselves, because Google Maps doesn't care about things like the best places to load or unload for a Lyft passenger. They're not really worried about, like, is there a bus stop there where they're trying to drop them off? They can't, like, a Lyft car can't stop in front of a bus stop, like things like that. Whereas the Lyft map can account for those things and kind of offer like the best user experience for that. The other thing that was interesting is when they started rolling out this map, they gave all of their drivers the choice of, you know, the new map or the old map. And I think it said 95% of the drivers chose the new map, which is pretty profound. Like, that's a pretty amazing acceptance rate, you know? So obviously it's fantastic for them.
I mean, that tells you there was clearly a problem
with
the old map.
Yeah, no doubt.
Specifically for this use case. Not that there's a problem with Google Maps overall, although we've already identified a couple of we wish were fixed. But for this use case in particular, it makes sense. And, you know, to your point, like I know in my suburban town here in Atlanta, they actually have a couple of spots that are designated Lyft and Uber pickup drop-off spots.
Right.
And those are not accounted for in Google Maps, but somebody like Lyft could then integrate those and say like, hey, I see you're here. Do you mind walking, you know, 30 feet over to the pickup spot? And that'll make it easy for your driver to find you.
Time for the Weird and Wacky segment.
abominable snowman.
He's not an axe murderer.
One of the TAs turned out to be a bot.
All right, it's weird and wacky time. We got two articles for you today. The second one is a doozy, so stay tuned. But first, U.S. to give away free lighthouses as GPS makes them unnecessary. This is kind of sad. Like, I mean, it makes sense that boats would navigate by GPS, and therefore, you know, you don't need lighthouses to navigate away from, you know, rocks or the shore or whatever. But, like, I like lighthouses. I don't want them to be unnecessary, but they are.
Well, yeah. Until all the satellites fall out of the sky, and then we'll need the lighthouses again, and then it'll be hot commodity.
Well, clearly, yeah. That's the case, yeah.
But
this is cool, you know?
Yeah, what this made me think of, this is like the Italian villages that are selling houses for $2. It used to be a dollar, by the way. It's moved up to $2 now, doubled in price. But this feels almost like the same thing, and I kind of feel like, maybe you and I should go halvesies on a lighthouse, fix it up and make it into an Airbnb.
I'm all for it. Yeah, there's one up in Maine. We could be in the same time zone as the lighthouse. Just hop the flights up there, you know?
And we make it an Airbnb and then put it up and make some money on that. I don't know why somebody's not doing that.
I think there are some qualifications. My guess is that they're giving it away to people that will keep it open to the public as a landmark that is visible, because the public loves lighthouses. I mean, you love like walking up in the light. I mean, I love it. Like, I go to St. Simon's, you go up to the lighthouse, you walk up the staircase, you get a great view from the top. You know, it's pretty, it's cool. I think their goal is more of that than
if they can't find that, they're going to auction these things off.
In which case, I'd go halvesies, you know, like $10. I'd bet $10 right now. $10 for a lighthouse?
I'm in for $10. Are you saying $10. half and do five each?
I was thinking five each, but okay. Well, 10 each works.
I think I've got 10 bucks.
I'm down with that.
I think I can do that. Somebody that doesn't have 10 bucks soon probably will not. Here's what happens when your lawyer uses ChatGPT. And then we've got another article, same thing. A lawyer faces sanctions after he used ChatGPT to write a brief riddled with fake citations. People don't realize that ChatGPT just makes up stuff, apparently. So this lawyer was representing a man who sued the airline and used ChatGPT to create a brief, and ChatGPT made up a bunch of cases and citations that don't exist.
Case numbers.
Mm-hmm. Case numbers.
My favorite is that after ChatGPT spit out some of the cases, the user said to ChatGPT, "Is this a real case?" And ChatGPT said, "Yes, it is a real case." Like, come on. Like that's like that's kind of like going to like a first year law student intern and being like, "All right, I need you to write this brief with all the citations, and I'm not going to double check anything you do, even though you've had no real training."
Yeah.
Go. And then they bring it to you, and they're like, "Oh, this looks too good to be true. Like, this is amazing. Wow, you found all these cases? Are all of these cases real?" Here's a tip, man. If it looks too good to be true, it probably is. Are all these cases real? The intern nods and says yes, while they're, you know, doing like whatever the maniacal hand thing is that villains do. And then you get in trouble. Like, come on, man. Like,
It would take is the spot check a couple.
Just one or two.
This one doesn't exist. Maybe the rest don't exist.
I mean, how do you not do some kind of quality assurance testing when you're turning something over completely and totally to an artificial whatever? Like, that, it just...
So it isn't just this lawyer that is now facing sanctions. So this case was moved to another court where the original lawyer did not have jurisdiction or didn't have, you know, license to practice law. So another lawyer in his same practice was actually the attorney listed, and he didn't know anything about this. So now that attorney and then the attorney that actually did this thing with ChatGPT are now both potentially in trouble. I mean, this potentially could get them disbarred and be able to practice law because you were too lazy and you just used a tool to do your job.
It's just crazy. I mean, listen, props to him for using the tool to get started. Like, I'm all for generative AI for getting started for a first draft, but man, check your work. I didn't know it could spit out inaccurate information. I'm sorry, like, back up. Did you not know that there's inaccurate information on the internet? Are you unaware of that? Did you think everything on the internet was true? Like, come on, man. Like,
but also, why are you just trusting a thing that is spitting out stuff?
I'm saying.
Right?
It just like, kills me.
Yeah, I'm sure you're a lawyer, not allowed man. To think critically. Quote Wikipedia for court cases, right? Like, I'm sure that's not a thing.
Right. I just
even kids in school are not allowed to use Wikipedia, I think, because you believe
that's dumb.
For it to be changed.
I think
it is kind of dumb, but
it's dumb. Yeah.
Tech wreck. All right, Adam, the favorite part of the show for everybody, well, at least for us, it's tech wreck time. What do you got for us this week?
All right, I'm going to recommend, actually, it's an AI tool. It's called Opus Clip, and I think it's, I want to say the
but don't
the
trust URL anything is, it does.
Yeah, well, obviously. the URL is opus.pro, and what's interesting is you can go into this tool, and you can copy in a link for a YouTube video, and it will auto-generate a bunch of TikTok video clips from the longer YouTube video, and it will add captions to them. And I tried this, actually, I think, with a TikTok Y'all video, and what it created was pretty fantastic. And it came out with like several clips that were very good. And like they started at the right place. They ended at the right place. There were interesting like components of the conversation. And I mean, it was fantastic. So I think the design is lacking a little bit. It's certainly not as innovative from a design perspective as like what you can sort of create and craft by hand. But if you need to create some quick TikTok clips, man, there's no way to do it any faster. It's wild. So
wow, this is actually pretty neat looking. They have a free trial as well.
There's a free trial. I think it's like it'll process like up to 2 or 3 hours of video. So you can get quite a few clips for free. And then after that, it's still real cheap. So it's worth checking out, I think.
And it looks like it's pretty new looking at their pricing page. Yeah. There's an early bird pack and then the essential plan, which is $19 a month.
Yep.
It's available in June, so that's tomorrow. But it's obviously a new service, so that's kind of neat.
It's really fascinating. All right, Sanjay, what tech rec do you have for us?
So I have got yet another Firefox tool, and I am actually loving this one. So if you remember, I have a tool, and now I've forgotten what it's called, and I'm trying to look. Oh, Update Scanner that I've recommended in the past. So this time I have a extension called Page Probe, and it's an automatic page monitor. What is different with Page Probe is that you can actually select an area of a page that you want to monitor, and it will monitor that area for changes. So specifically, if you're looking at a product and you're waiting for the price of that product to change, you can actually have that text convert into an integer or a number or floating, and then compare it and say like, hey, if this number goes below this or above this or whatever, you know, alert me. And that's exactly what this does. So I've actually moved a bunch of pages that I used to monitor on Update Scanner.
Okay.
That would falsely, you know, come up because there were changes on the page, but not changes to the thing that I was actually caring about.
Right. Right.
And I've moved them over to Page Probe, and it seems to work pretty well. Now, updates are not happening that fast. There's a lot of bugs in this thing. It's not that smooth to do. Like I was actually trying to add it'll monitor JSON data pages as well.
Right.
And there's not a clean way of actually adding that page. I had to kind of hack it through, and there's no instructions on it.
Okay.
So this is not for the faint of heart to do this. But if you are willing to muddle through it, it seems like it works pretty well, and it is completely free. So this oftentimes I was looking on Reddit. This gets compared to sites like VisualPing and some other sites like that will monitor web pages for you. And those are all, you know, a couple of pages it'll do for free, and then you have to pay for it. This is completely free. It's local on your local Firefox. So your Firefox has to be running for this to be monitoring the pages.
Right. Okay.
But it seems to work really, really well. So, and I'm digging it.
So I'm curious about the use case, right? So because I mean, you just mentioned like, okay, monitoring a page with a product on it to see if the price shifts. That makes sense to me, though. I can't actually at the moment think of any products that I would do that for. Like there's nothing that I'm like watching for. I don't have anything.
Well, I'll tell you, I've recommended before Camel. That's probably the best one for monitoring Amazon prices.
Right. Right. But other than monitoring prices, like, is there any other real use case for this? I mean, like, could you use it, for example, to monitor like website, if your website goes down or something? Like, 'cause obviously there would be no text on the page anymore. So does it help with that? Maybe
100%. Yeah. You can use update scanner for that as well.
Okay.
I've been using it. Most of my use cases are for like waiting for stuff to buy. So like there's a couple of products that are out of stock and I can't find them anywhere. And I'm having it monitored to say like, you know, available. And
like
so that
those
I can
perfect
jump
athletic
on.
Socks you've been jonesing for, yeah, like those are out of stock, you just can't get them. Got it.
So okay. Hard to find.
Yeah, and, they're tough. You know, yeah,
it's got the tight top that it doesn't fall down with. But there are other things as well that that can be useful to kind of know about, like a page about a software package that I care about, and I want to make sure that I see when a revision goes up that it's gotten updated. So this can help with something like that.
Okay.
Sometimes it'll be for like mundane things. I haven't used it for, so like I keep track of how many, this is kind of nerdy and self-grandizing a little bit, but how many citations there are to the patents that I've been issued. Like how many new patents have been issued that cite the patent that I have, just to know, because that kind of shows value of the patent when they're cited by more and more patents.
Yep.
There is no way with the U.S. Patent and Trademark Office to get a notification on something like that. So you just have to monitor the page. And in the past, I've used the update scanner. But the problem is if the formatting on the page changes, it pops up an alert. Well, I don't actually care about that. I just care about this one number.
This one number on the page. Makes sense. Right.
So there are weird kind of use cases like that, that you know, if you care about a very small portion of a page that this is useful for, and you can change, you can set it for scanning it every second to, you know, days on, you know, like every 7 or 8 days. And then there's a variability in there. Like you can have it vary so that it doesn't look so bottish and it'll randomize the time that it's checking over time. So it's a reasonably well done piece of software. I just wish they would squash some of these bugs and work on it, but it's hard to complain because it's free. So
yeah, that's fair. That's fair.
Give it a try. Page Probe.
All right, Sanjay, it's that time of the show. How can our listeners find and connect with you?
They can find me on LinkedIn. Go search for Sanjay Parekh. I'm the one in Atlanta with the smiling face that looks like this. Or sanjayparekh.com. And I'm pretty sure there's a link to my LinkedIn from there.
Yeah.
Well, what about you, Adam?
AdamJWalker.com. It's the best. Just go there. You don't even need to go to any other website on any other web. Like that's the only webpage you actually ever need to go to. You don't like news. You don't need none of that. You don't need weather. Just
When I open a new tab, my homepage is your website. So
as it should be.
I mean that clearly. That gets me everywhere in the world that I want to be. Do, do, do.